So, imagine you're walking into a really loud, just crowded coffee shop in London.
Right. Lots of noise, lots of distractions.
Exactly. And you look up at the menu, and it's entirely in French, but the English translations are just kind of hovering right over the text, like right in your field of vision.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And meanwhile, your phone is completely out of sight. It's just sitting in your pocket.
Yeah.
Yet it just drafted and sent this like perfect reply to your boss, matching your exact tone of voice.
It's crazy to think about.
It is. And today, for you listening, we're taking a custom-tailored deep dive into a really fascinating stack of sources covering Samsung's massive Unpacked 2026 event.
Yeah, the London event.
Right. And this material basically proves that the era of, walking down the street, craning your neck, and just staring down at a glowing rectangle, that is officially over.
It really is. I mean, the industry term for this massive shift is ambient computing.
Ambient computing, right?
Yeah, because think about it. For the last 2 decades, interacting with the internet required conscious friction, right?
Definitely. Like pulling your phone out of your pocket.
Exactly. You had to pull a device out, you had to unlock it, open an app, and basically disconnect from your physical surroundings just to engage with the digital world.
You're kind of trapped in the screen.
Right. But the devices they just announced in London, they signal this huge pivot toward technology that simply lives in the background of your life. It's invisible when you don't need it, but instantly available when you do.
And for you, the listener, our mission today is to understand the actual mechanics of this shift. We're not just going to sit here and read you a list of megapixel counts,
No, nobody wants that.
Right. We are going to look at how Samsung has fundamentally transformed. They're not just a hardware manufacturer anymore. They are this cohesive ecosystem platform, and it's driven entirely by this historic, deeply integrated alliance with Google.
It's a huge deal.
It really is.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's unpack this.
Well, and to understand the ecosystem, you really have to look at the physical limitations they had to overcome first.
Okay, what do you mean?
I mean, before technology can metaphorically fade into the background, the hardware itself needs to physically start disappearing.
Oh, right. Like it has to get smaller.
Exactly. Which brings us to the Galaxy Z Fold 8, which is just, it's an absolute masterclass in miniaturization.
Yeah, I was looking at the sources, and they had this thing measuring a staggering 4.5 millimeters in thickness
Yeah.
when it's unfolded.
It's almost unbelievably thin.
It is.
Yeah.
To put that into perspective, they've essentially engineered a high-end desktop computer into a chassis that's roughly the thickness of like three stacked credit cards.
Yeah.
But looking at the teardowns in these sources, I want to dig into how that is mechanically possible. I mean, they have dual high-capacity batteries, these massive camera modules, and an entirely new processor in a space so thin it defies logic.
Well, the core enabler of that ultra-thin profile is the new 2-nanometer processor architecture.
2 nanometers. I mean, that's incredibly small.
Yeah, it's microscopic. When we talk about nanometers in chip design, we're talking about the physical distance between the billions of transistors on the silicon itself.
Okay.
So by shrinking that gap down to just 2 nanometers, the electrons literally have less distance to travel.
Oh, I see.
Right, so that physical reduction means the chip computes data drastically faster, but it also draws significantly less battery power.
Which I guess also solves the heat problem, right? Because if you cram a high-powered chip into a 4.5 millimeter space, it should logically just melt the glass right in your hand.
Exactly. It would normally overheat instantly.
But because that 2-nanometer architecture is so efficient, they were able to implement this advanced vapor chamber cooling system. The sources really get into the details on this.
Yeah, the vapor chamber is fascinating.
It's wild. They use microscopic amounts of liquid inside the phone that absorb the heat from the processor, turn into a vapor, spread across the back of the device to cool down, and then they condense back into a liquid.
It's literally an active weather system operating inside a space thinner than a pencil.
It's incredible.
And tying those two ultra-thin halves together is this mechanical achievement they're calling FlexHinge 3.0.
Right, because hinges have always been the weak point.
Exactly. The historical Achilles heel of foldables was always the crease and the physical gap when it was closed. I mean, if you fold a piece of paper, you get a hard permanent crease, right?
Yeah, of course.
Previous phones basically tried to force the glass to do the exact same thing.
Which created that terrible rut down the middle of the screen. You know, the one that gathered dust and eventually just destroyed the display over time.
Right. But FlexHinge 3.0 just abandons the flat fold entirely. The internal mechanism now curves the flexible glass into this really subtle microscopic teardrop shape inside the chassis when the phone is closed.
Oh, so the display never actually folds completely flat upon itself.
Exactly. And this eliminates the crease entirely. It allows the two halves to sit totally flush with zero gap.
Wow.
And it finally achieves an IP58 dust resistance rating because there is literally nowhere for microscopic particles to enter the housing.
I mean, it is brilliant engineering, but I have to look at the financial reality of this, especially when we talk about the Ultra variant of the Fold 8.
Oh, yeah, the Ultra is a different beast.
Yeah, the sources detail this model, and it's even thinner, 4.3 millimeters. It's forged from aerospace-grade titanium, packs a 200-megapixel camera, and carries a price tag of over $2,200.
It's steep.
It's really steep. So at what point does this stop being a consumer device and just become, like, an unreachable luxury tax? I mean, is the market actually going to support a $2,200 phone?
Well, what's fascinating here is Samsung's deliberate high-margin strategy. They are completely abandoning the race to make foldables cheap.
Really? They're just giving up on the budget market for these?
Yeah. The Z Fold 8 Ultra is positioned explicitly as a super premium tier. We're talking enterprise users, executives, and early adopters. They are basically using that price tag as a psychological anchor to establish it as the ultimate status symbol.
Right. But, you know, a psychological anchor doesn't move units if people physically can't afford the monthly payment.
No, you're right. Which is why they offset that sticker shock with highly aggressive back-end incentives.
Oh, okay. Like what?
The sources highlight that pre-ordering the Ultra nets you a $350 Amazon gift card, enhanced trade-in values, and a bunch of bundled accessories.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, so they preserve the prestige of that $2,200 MSRP, which keeps the brand equity really high, while using these indirect discounts as a catalyst to actually move the inventory.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. They keep a luxury reputation, but they quietly hand you cash under the table to justify the splurge.
Exactly.
But looking at the broader market, that premium-only strategy really explains some of the very surprising data our sources have on the Galaxy Z Flip 8.
Yes, the Flip series.
Right. Historically, the clamshell Flip series was Samsung's attempt to bring foldables to the masses. But now, the sources suggest there's a 50% probability that the Flip 8 is the last one they will ever make.
Yeah, which is huge news. I mean, the Flip 8 is a highly capable device. It's primarily defined by its new wraparound cover screen.
Right. The display on the back now covers the entire panel.
Exactly. You can navigate Google Maps, tap for NFC payments, manage your day all without ever actually opening the hinge.
And it leans entirely into that Gemini Nano 4 AI integration.
Oh, absolutely.
The sources say the AI runs locally on the device, reads the context of an incoming message, and suggests full, nuanced replies that actually match your historical tone of voice.
Yeah.
You can literally have a whole conversation without typing a single word.
It's incredibly smart.
It is. But looking at the battery specs, it's still rocking the same 3,800 milliamp hour capacity as the last generation. It feels like just a minor iterative update.
Yeah, it's not a huge hardware leap.
No. And if you look at the global market,
you
have Chinese tech giants like Motorola and Xiaomi offering remarkably similar clamshell hardware for literally half the price of the Samsung Flip.
Right. And Samsung is losing their monopoly on the entry-level foldable, and they know it. They cannot win a race to the bottom on price against supply chains that are designed for razor-thin margins. So rather than fight a losing battle, supply chain reports indicate Samsung is preparing to shift the battlefield entirely.
By sunsetting the Flip to introduce a totally new form factor, right?
Exactly.
The sources mention things like rollable displays that expand laterally on command, or even tri-fold tablets that collapse down to the size of a standard phone.
Yeah, they are abandoning the clamshell to create a totally new category where they can, again, dictate that premium pricing.
Right. But, you know, the physical form of the phone will keep mutating.
Mm-hmm.
But whether it folds or rolls or shrinks, a phone is still an object in your pocket.
Sure.
If the ultimate goal is ambient computing, like we talked about, the ecosystem needs a constant, unbroken stream of data about your physical state.
Mm.
To truly act as a background assistant, the technology has to literally live on your body.
Which brings us perfectly to the wearable bridge, the Galaxy Watch 9 and that massive Watch Ultra 2.
Yeah, the wearables.
We've had smartwatches for years, but the hurdle has always been data processing. If you have clinical-grade sensors monitoring your heart rate, your blood oxygen, and stress levels every single second, that creates a massive data bottleneck.
Oh, sure. I mean, if a watch has to constantly ping a distant cloud server to process your pulse in real time, the battery would probably die in like 2 hours.
Exactly. And that processing bottleneck is the exact problem Samsung solved with this new AI-driven bioactive sensor.
Oh, so how does it work now?
Well, the heavy lifting of crunching that dense biometric data is no longer sent to some server farm. It is processed locally, right there on the wrist, using a dedicated miniaturized neural processing unit inside the watch.
Which is what allows them to achieve that astonishing 96% concordance with clinical medical devices for sleep tracking.
Yeah, 96% is incredible for a consumer device.
It really is. And because the processing is local, they introduced this fascinating on-device energy score system. It analyzes your sleep architecture, your previous day's physical exertion, and your resting heart rate variability.
Super comprehensive.
Yeah. I love the analogy and the sources of this being like a miniature pit crew for your body. You wake up, and the pit crew instantly tells you, hey, your central nervous system is recovered, you are cleared for a grueling workout, or they throw the caution flag and say, your metrics are suppressed, you really need a rest day to avoid injury.
Right. And for the demographic pushing those physical limits, the sources detail the Watch Ultra 2.
Oh, yeah. The Ultra 2.
This is a direct, undeniable strike at the Apple Watch Ultra market share. The casing is forged from reinforced titanium. The display is protected by a totally scratch-resistant sapphire crystal.
Wow.
And thanks to that on-device AI power management, it achieves a legitimate 3-day battery life, even under heavy GPS and cellular use.
That's seriously impressive. But, I mean, even with a 3-day battery and a brilliant screen, a watch still demands your active visual attention, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
You have to break eye contact with your environment, physically raise your wrist, and look at a screen. If we are genuinely chasing a frictionless existence, looking down is still a barrier.
It's still friction.
Right. So here's where it gets really interesting. The true frontier of ambient computing isn't on your wrist. It's placing the digital world directly over the physical one. And Samsung's announcement of the Android XR smart glasses represents probably the biggest leap forward in this space to date.
Oh, absolutely. The extended reality segment of this event was a showcase of this historic trilateral partnership between Samsung, Google, and Qualcomm.
The big three.
Yeah. And their objective was to completely dismantle the form factor we currently associate with mixed reality.
Because when we hear mixed reality, we instinctively picture something like the Apple Vision Pro, right?
Yeah.
Like a heavy, bulky ski goggle headset that basically isolates you in your living room.
Exactly. But the sources explicitly note that the Samsung XR glasses look almost identical to ordinary lightweight sunglasses.
That is wild.
You could wear them at a cafe, on a subway, or just walking through a park, and literally nobody around you would know you were wearing a supercomputer on your face.
And the visual interface relies on these transparent micro-LED displays embedded directly into the lenses. So instead of blocking your vision with an opaque screen, these lenses project a head-up display right into your natural field of view.
Right, it augments reality without replacing it.
Yes. You see the actual physical street in front of you, but with turn-by-turn Google Maps navigation arrows painted onto the pavement. Or you look at a physical menu in a foreign language, and the AI just projects the translated text directly over the original words.
And the audio engineering is just as critical to the illusion. The sources highlight the use of bone conduction audio.
Oh, bone conduction. I've heard of that.
Yeah. So rather than putting a speaker inside your ear canal, which blocks ambient noise and kind of makes you deaf to the world, the rigid frames of the glasses just rest against your temporal bone.
Okay. So how did that sound?
They transmit digital audio through physical vibrations that bypass the eardrum entirely and stimulate the cochlea directly.
Wow. So you can hear the Gemini AI speaking to you in crisp detail, but your ear canals are completely open to hear traffic or conversations or just ambient noise.
Exactly. It creates the seamless auditory and visual blend of the physical and the digital worlds.
Okay. But I have to put on my skeptic hat for a second and just challenge the specs we're seeing in these sources.
Fair enough.
They are claiming a 9-hour battery life utilizing the new Snapdragon AR1 Gen 3 chip. But the fine print clearly states that is for mixed use.
Right, mixed use.
If I am actually utilizing this device for its intended purpose, you know, having the Gemini voice assistant constantly listening, utilizing the camera for real-time translation, streaming navigation to the micro LEDs, there's just no way a battery that fits into sunglass frames lasts more than, what, a few hours?
It's a very valid point.
And beyond the hardware limitations, we really have to talk about the societal implications. Are we really pretending that the public is ready for millions of people wearing hidden AI analyzing cameras on their faces in public spaces.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you really have to look at the historical timeline of wearable optics. I mean, your concerns are exactly why this technology has taken over a decade to reach the consumer market.
Really? A decade?
Yeah, think back to 2013 and the launch of Google Glass.
Oh man, Google Glass.
Right, it was a commercial disaster precisely because of the societal backlash against that integrated camera and because the hardware just looked entirely alien.
I remember people called them glass holes because the privacy intrusion was just so blatant.
Precisely, that was the issue. And following that failure, the industry retreated. Microsoft pivoted the HoloLens entirely to enterprise and military applications.
Right.
Apple eventually entered with the Vision Pro to prove the spatial computing concept was viable, but they did it at an isolating size and just an exorbitant price.
Right.
But now, in 2026, the convergence of 2-nanometer chips, cloud edge processing, and micro-LEDs has allowed Samsung to finally hit that sweet spot. The privacy concerns of public cameras, they definitely remain a valid societal debate, but the hardware is finally small enough and the battery is finally resilient enough to actually survive a commute and a workday.
So it's the culmination of over a decade of expensive industry failures.
Yes, exactly.
But as the sources emphasize, having a 4.5-millimeter folding phone, a clinical-grade titanium watch, and AR sunglasses means absolutely nothing if they operate in silos.
Right.
You can have the most advanced titanium hardware in the world, but without the invisible glue tying it all together, it's really just expensive jewelry.
The true innovation isn't the glass or the metal. It's the software architecture and the artificial intelligence unifying the devices.
Which brings us to the final piece of the ecosystem, the invisible brain. This entire hardware lineup is powered by the new One UI 9 operating system and the deep OS-level integration of Gemini Nano 4.
Yeah, One UI 9 is built on the foundation of Android 17, and its primary directive is eliminating friction between your devices.
Okay, so what does that look like in practice?
Well, if you are reading an article on your Z Fold and you put the phone in your pocket, the XR glasses instantly pick up the context and can just summarize the rest of the text into your ear via bone conduction.
Wow.
The synchronization is absolute.
And crucially, One UI 9 includes this localized intelligent privacy hub. Going back to our concerns about the XR glasses having cameras everywhere, this OS actively monitors all background data requests.
Which is huge for privacy.
It is. If a third-party app attempts to access the microphone on your glasses or the camera on your phone without explicit context, the OS physically blocks the hardware access at the chip level.
Yeah.
But the defining feature of this software is that Google's Gemini Nano 4 isn't just an app you download. It is woven into the very fabric of the operating system.
Right, and integrating it natively into the OS fundamentally changes how the AI operates. Because Gemini Nano 4 is optimized for on-device execution, it doesn't need to ping a cloud server to understand your requests.
It's all local.
Exactly. It operates offline, utilizing that 2-nanometer neural processing unit.
The automation capabilities detailed in the sources are staggering. Because the AI has system-level access, it acts as a true autonomous agent.
Right.
You can just speak into your glasses, and the AI will scan your secure email app for your upcoming flight itinerary, silently cross-reference Google Maps for the weather forecast at your destination, and then autonomously generate a comprehensive climate-appropriate packing list directly into your Samsung Notes app.
It's like having a real assistant.
Right. It completes a multi-step, multi-app workflow in seconds, entirely in the background, without you ever touching a screen or exposing your data to the open internet.
And that offline capability is the ultimate differentiator. It guarantees enterprise-grade privacy and zero latency because the data literally never leaves the device.
So what does this all mean? When we step back and look at the full dossier of this unpacked event, the hardware, the wearables, the glasses, the AI, what is the overarching narrative for the industry?
The narrative is really the power of the alliance. To understand the gravity of Samsung and Google unifying their ecosystem so deeply, we really have to remember their history.
Oh, right. They haven't always been this close.
Not at all. In the early 2010s, Samsung spent billions developing their own software, the Tizen OS, in a desperate attempt to break free from Google's Android ecosystem.
I remember Tizen.
Yeah, and it failed entirely. They learned that they could master hardware, but they could not build a dominant software platform alone. Today, Apple's deep integration with OpenAI presents an existential threat to both of them.
So they were forced together.
Samsung and Google had to unite. Google gets their most advanced AI distributed into millions of ultra-premium devices, and Samsung guarantees that their industry-leading hardware has the smartest, most secure software brain on the market.
It is a symbiotic fortress built to dominate the next decade of computing.
It really is.
So, wrapping up this deep dive for you today, we have traced the evolution of the smartphone from a bulky slab to a piece of aerospace-grade titanium that folds down to 4.5 millimeters. We've looked at how processing bottlenecks were solved to put clinical-grade, AI-driven pit crews right on our wrists.
Yeah.
And we explored the mechanical realities of projecting translated reality directly into our eyes using micro-LEDs and bone conduction. And all of this is orchestrated by this unprecedented system-level alliance between Samsung and Google.
And, you know, the reason you should care about this specific moment in tech history is that the era of gimmicks is over.
Right.
We have endured years of experimental foldables with massive creases and clunky, socially unacceptable smart glasses. This event marks the definitive end of the trial and error phase for these categories. The hardware has finally caught up to the ambition. Ambient computing has officially arrived.
The technology is finally ready to fade into the background. But I want to leave you with a final thought to explore on your own as you step away from this deep dive.
Oh, I like this.
Think about the trajectory of the automation we just discussed. If our devices are now autonomously analyzing our central nervous system recovery on our wrists, if they're independently reading our emails and contextually writing our messages in our exact tone of voice, and if they are literally projecting an augmented, translated version of reality directly into our eyes, at what point do these gadgets stop being mere tools that we pick up to perform a task and start becoming actual digital extensions of our own cognition?
When the friction disappears, the line between the user and the tool really begins to blur.
It really does. The physical barrier between us and the digital world is basically gone. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. We'll catch you on the next one.